Well, yeah, I'm actually talking about the retraining of the file, not so much the, the quiz. But those techniques do work, they help me some of the time. Okay. The uses you came up with, some of them were absolutely ingenious. So, someone said, well, we might think of a use in the future for this, but they don't have that, I don't know what to do. So, I like kick around, in as true a form as I can. I don't want to limit it to just what human hearing can do. So, unanticipated future use. People go down in all sorts of ways. I mean, the easiest way to say it is, I'm an archivist and I don't know the future, so I'm going to keep it just the way it is. That was one. The second one was new compression. I'm going to compress it, and then I'm going to decompress it, do something with it, and recompress it, and go through that several times. So that was something that you might need to do that would be a situation. Someone said, and I thought this was really cleverly crafted, I might want to compress it even more than MP3 would, and with speech. And so for speech, I can compress it even more. Now, the reason I think that was cleverly crafted is because someone else said, well, I have speech, and of course you can't use MP3 for speech. Well, that wasn't actually right. It was sort of the other way around. You can't use the speech compression for music, but you can use the MP3 for speech. So if you compress it, you get a better tighter compression. If you use speech compression, you're compressing the speech. Right? So you can get tighter compression. It's very important that all you have is speech. So some people sort of have the right idea, but have the wrong sense. One person came up with an absolutely brilliant answer, which was, I want open source solutions unencumbered by any sort of intellectual property right. MP3 is subject to some intellectual property rights, so I want to use Wave or something else. Way outside of what I'm thinking about, but also a Wave. Okay. The grades on the exam, there are 27 people in class, 16 grades of 100, a couple of grades of 80. There's a quantization noise in the measurement, right? We can't measure things going to one or two different very easily in a exam with so few questions on it. So if you have 100, I can't tell you that you know everything, but I can tell you that you know many things. If you've got a lowest grade in the class, I think it was 40, I can tell you that you know something, and that probably it's well worth coming to see me or studying or things like that. That's a good indicator. If you get an 80, I can't tell you that you know anything significantly different from the people who got 100. But I can't measure that the people who got 100.
The 60, 70, 80 range. I mean, I wouldn't try to read it as, you know, oh my God, there were 60 students in this class. But I would worry in the, 40, 50, 60 range. 60 is in both of those ranges. And I wouldn't worry much at all in the 100 range, although that, as I say, it doesn't mean that you got everything nailed, but you did get nailed. Questions? So I concluded that was the muddiest point from the last class. Okay. Thank you, Andy. Oh, it's just a thank you.
Did you clean it up?
You're back?
I don't know.
We'll work with what you got.
Okay.
If you got a minute to do more, give it up. So thank what we can get. very strange.
It's like I'm listening to some sort of modern rendition of classical music. It's got a rhythm to it. Might come back with a paper or something. Okay?
So you always proclaimed yourself as having understood everything when you left class the last time. I mean, it's just amazing how well understood things were. Or how well understood people thought things were. How's the homework? Good? I tell you, that's really phenomenal. I mean, this is the hardest homework most years is down behind. And not only that, you thought it was okay. Yeah. So imagine now if I gave you the assignment of building a system for the registrar. Right, so do it the same way. You know, we got these iterations, and we got the conditionals, and we got the sequential, and we can give names to the variables, and we'll just have one variable for every student. It's going to, like, get really complicated really fast, right? We'll tease it away, probably. But still, it's going to be complicated, right? So if you want to write a very complicated program, like to do what the registrar has to do on campus, you probably don't want to start from scratch and say, okay, well, let x equal 1, and, you know, 427,000 lines later, there's just one little error in there someplace, we don't know quite where it is. Okay? So what we want to do is we want to have a system that allows you to write programs really fast. And what we'd really like to do is we'd like to allow you to write programs just by laying things out visually and saying, here's what I'd like to happen. Now, what we're going to have to give up is you can't solve any problem anymore. So you already know systems like this. Systems like Excel work like this. They are, they're not procedural programs. They're non-procedural. You don't tell Excel how to do, you know, what order to do the computation. You just tell it what you want to appear in the box. And it does the computations in whatever order is necessary to get that computed value to appear in the box. Now, Excel is numerical, and you'll remember that we talked about having two kinds of programming from the earliest days. Numerical programming, originally for computing ballistic trajectories, and non-numerical programming, symbolic programming, originally for computing for breaking codes. Right, that's where the National Security Agency constructed that whole side of things. So, you're familiar already with things like Excel, but not necessarily with the symbolic side, the non-numeric side. So, actually, how many people are familiar with things like Excel? Yeah, okay. So, if you're not familiar with things like Excel, trust me, there's something like what we're going to be talking about today, except for the numerics. And I'll be happy to chat with you about it individually or Rebecca over in the lab to show you how to use Excel. Excel is really handy for the things that we did, like in HomoFlow, which had a nasty habit of showing up, by the way, on the midterm or the final. So it's handy to have a little bit of facility with Excel because it makes problems like that much easier. Okay, so today what we're going to do is we're going to try to answer questions like, how do I build a system for the registrar? Ooh, this looks really bad. Look at that one over there. Oh, okay. So, we're going to talk about what's come to be called databases, and we'll talk in particular about one kind of databases. Now, if you took a database class, you would spend your first week in which they would go through and then, oh, all these kinds of databases. There are network databases. There are hierarchical databases. And then it will turn out that the only databases anybody ever uses are relational databases. And you're like, well, why are you trying to confuse me? Right? So we're just going to skip all that. There are plenty of other kinds of databases. Object-oriented databases, something we won't talk about today, is all the rage if you want to go out and get a job programming databases. But the databases that we'll focus on are the ones that are most widely used, relational databases. And then it turns out that the one that you're most likely to have on your computer is the one that comes with Microsoft Office, which is called Access. And so we'll actually use Access. Now, the goal here is not to learn to use Access. There are a lot of people that know how to use Access and don't know how to use it right. So instead, we're going to try to understand how to use it right, what it's designed to be able to do, what its interesting and important capabilities are, and then look at use Access to understand those. You can later then go program for Access, or you could program for Oracle, which is a major industrial product, commercial product, or anything else once you have the basic ideas. But the nice thing about Access is that it has a graphical programming environment. So we can bring it up on these machines and look at how this connects to that, and we'll see this and that with a line between them, right? So it gives us one extra way to think through this. Okay, so there are three concepts that all kind of run together when you start to try to read about this, because depending on who the author is, they may be talking to you about a different sort of thing. So a database is what we're going to focus on today. And the database is the data itself and the way in which that data is organized and the kinds of things you can do with that data. So it's like a program, right? A database and a program are sort of at the same level. A database management system is at the level of a programming language. So if you took a database course in computer science here at Maryland, you would learn how database management systems are designed so that people could then use them to create databases. What kinds of problems exist with databases? They would have to learn what they are. They do that by making a database using some database management system, and then they study all the things that can go wrong with them and all the ways of fixing that. Now, we have to worry about the same kinds of things because although things can go wrong with your database and the database management system you use, let's say Access, has to have then facilities for taking care of those. So you're going to deal with the same set of issues, but you're sort of living with the problem. From their perspective, you are the problem. And from their perspective, of course, from your perspective, they're the problem, right? They created the database management system and you need to learn it. Okay, so Access is a database management system. Now, the reason why relational databases became the big deal is that the key idea of non-procedural programming is I just tell you what I want the result to be. And once you know, you the database, know what you want the result to be, there are many ways in which you can compute it. In databases, some of those ways are more efficient than others. So you might remember from high school that you would learn how to take a complicated formula and simplify it so that fewer computations were needed to get the same result using things like the distributive rule, the associative rule, the commutative rule. Remember all those things from algebra? Right? Okay. So we have similar sets of things. In fact, any kind of a mathematics that has a set of rules that allow you to reorganize things is called an algebra. So as what you learned is algebra isn't the algebra, it's an algebra. And there's also an algebra for databases, in particular for relations, which is what databases represent, and it's called, you're going to guess quickly, right? Relational algebra. Okay, so the relational algebra is something like JavaScript for you, right? So the database management system is something like the JavaScript interpreter, and the database is something like your JavaScript program. That's sort of the level they live at. Right, so this is an abstract mathematical construction. This is a specific implementation of the abstract capability, and then the database is a use of the specific implementation of the abstract capability. Now, we land up, therefore, with two ways to say everything. One is the way that it's actually built in the database management system, or whatever these people happen to call their pieces. And the other is the abstraction of the relational algebra that's common across all relational databases. So sometimes you'll see people flip back and forth between the alternate vocabularies. And I'll tell you the alternate vocabularies as we go, but throughout this class I'm going to stay with the more concrete one, right, the one we can actually see, the pieces that are in Access. Okay. So these are the terms that we're going to use to talk about what we're talking about. The entirety of what we're going to do is built around tables. So in a database, a table is like a variable is in a programming language. It's the place where the data is stored. So tables are the fundamental element. But a table has got components to it. So when we do operations, just like we could do addition or multiplication in our programming language, or actually the less than and greater than and equal to and things like that, those are all operations in the programming language. When we do those operations on tables, but unlike the programming language, the tables have a substructure to them. Now, it's not going to be any too complicated. They have rows, and they have columns. That's it, right? So all we have to do to understand what a table is to understand what's the meaning of a column and what's the meaning of a row. So a row represents a thing, right? An entity, something that that you're trying to describe. And we'll call that row a record. So we'll have a set of records in our table, and one per row. Now, each record will have then several things that together describe that entity. And what's unique about the way in which we're going to think about databases is that for everything, it's the same set of attributes that describe it. So we're going to call those fields. So a field is a column, and every row will have column 1, column 2, column 3, column 4, and it will be just the way you'd imagine. Column 1 will be the first name, column 2 will be the last name, column 3 will be the street address, column 4 will be the city, column 5 will be the state, column 6 will be the zip code, column 7 will be the phone number, right? You'll just have a set of what we call fields. And every record will have exactly the same set of fields. Clear? Okay, now we have to go one step further. What goes in a field has no substructure. You can't put 17 things in a field. You can put one thing in a field. So if I, for example, put my street address as one field, then you cannot find all the people who live on my street. Because what's in there is my whole street address, not the name of the street. If you wanted the number and the name of the street, you would have had to have stored them separately. You've seen this happen before, right? Just before I came to class, I typed all your grades into an Excel spreadsheet. Because I didn't have a spreadsheet already with your names. Rebecca's got that. I simply typed all your names. But because I didn't type them first name and last name in separate fields, I couldn't sort the spreadsheet by last name. I could only sort it by first name. Right? I mean, you've seen this sort of problem before, right? So, do you really have first names and last names?
Yes. Did I model that when I made that table in the spreadsheet? No. Therefore, you no longer have first initial last names for the purpose of the spreadsheet that I made. You just have name. It's going to be the same here. Once you put something into a field, you have said, I model the world as if that is an atomic element. Atomic not meaning it's likely to explode or blow up the world. Atomic meaning like an atom. It's not subdivided. Name before they figured out they could subdivide. Okay. So you've got field, record, and table. Right? Okay. Now, it turns out that it's handy to have a way to refer to every row in the database, to refer to each row. And it's inconvenient, for example, to use people's names if I have people in my table, because two people might have the same name, or in this class, three people might have the same name, right? So using any naturally occurring field is a little bit iffy. But we can create an extra field and call that field the primary key. And you're familiar with many of these primary keys. So how many of you have in your pocket a University of Maryland ID card or your purse? Yeah? Okay. And have you ever typed in this number on the back? Library? Yeah, it's a primary key in your library record, right? You ever typed in the number on the front? Well, it's a primary key in some other database. Your driver's license. It's got a number on it? Primary key. Yeah. So you deal with primary keys all the time. It's just that when you go to get your driver's license, they don't say, okay, well, your primary key will be, right? They say your driver's license number. Social Security number? That's a really interesting primary key. So did you know about the Privacy Act of 1974? It prevents the federal government from maintaining records in which the Social Security number is used as the primary key, except for certain purposes. It doesn't actually say primary key in the law, but that's why you're not allowed to use a Social Security number, is because we don't want easy reference to use in one database, let's say the unpaid parking fines, and in another database, let's say Social Security records, so that they could reduce your Social Security to pay the unpaid parking fines, right? So the federal government actually said, ooh, this would be too easy to put things together. So that gives you some idea how important primary keys are. Okay, so when you think of a table, you have to think of the primary key. Now, is the primary key a record, a field, or neither of the above? It says it's a field. You should know it's a field. It's a part of a record. Yes? Make sense? Okay, and then what we call a database is just a bunch of things. It's too easy. There's nothing in the database except a bunch of tables. And some instructions on what you need. So getting the database right is, to very large measure, getting the tables. Okay, so we can sort of see these things now. Here's a primary key in this table, membership code. So the primary key has a requirement on it that it must be unique, which is to say if I have a primary key L, I cannot have another L any place in it. So I can use membership code as a primary key in the membership plans file, but I can't use membership code as a primary key in the people file, because several people might have the same membership code. So then I would use member number or something like that. Okay, so there is a unique primary key that can be used to refer to rows in the table. Every field we give a name to just for convenience. And then once we give a name to that field, it doesn't matter what order we write them in. Because what we're really doing is we're relating
this, this, and this. That's what an entry is. That's what a record is in a database. It's a relationship between these, and these, and that's indeed where the name relational database comes from. Okay, so then these are records. Those are fields. Now, why can't I use membership names as a primary key? So here, you may not be able to see the English back there. Membership name is the spelled out version of L. L is late shift, M is matinee, P is prime time. So there's no duplication here either.
You could, but why would you want to? It's just a long string of characters. It just seems to me you would want to keep your primary key as simple as possible.
Okay, so that's the answer. There are two reasons to keep the primary key simple. One is that it takes up storage to store stuff, and I'm going to write the primary key a lot. Because I'm never going to write any of the rest of this. Every time I want to refer to it, I'm just going to write L. So I want it to be shorthand to save myself memory space. So my database will be smaller for the same function.
So the question is, can you, you said, why can't you use it? You can use it.
Absolutely, you can.
But you don't use it.
You wouldn't want to. The other thing is, if I want to match on a primary key, I'd have to match on every character, make sure they were all the right characters in the right order, and that would take me more time. So there's efficiency at runtime, and there's storage space. Okay. Now, these are two different views, and the first time you see this, it can be a little confusing. So this view is the view. That's it. There's no other view. Right? And then this is the other view. Sorry. And this is merely taking one of these fields, so that's like membership code, and saying what kinds of things can go in it. Well, it can't be any longer than one character, for example. So this is a blow up of membership code. And you'll see that because Access knows how to do tables, they got tables describing tables. So you have to sort of remember when you're looking at the table, the real table, and when you're looking at something that's describing the table. Yeah?
Primary key, field name, records,
they're
all kind of things.
So one of the fields is a primary key. It's a field that satisfies the characteristic that it can never be empty, it must be, the value in it must be unique. So one of the fields is a primary key, so that's a field. What was the third? You gave me three options?
Record.
A record is a row.
Okay.
Right? So essentially if I say, I've got, you know when you go before the judge and the judge says, boy, you got a record here, right? Well, somebody else could have come and the judge might have said, hey, you've got no record at all. So there's no record for every person in that cop show sense. Yeah? So there's one row in a table describing, you know, what infractions for every person. Other questions? Okay. Yeah.
What is the input math?
What?
I ran into some place where it wasn't and it caused problems.
Yeah. So this is one of the issues that comes up sort of after you have the basic idea of a database. Then it might turn out that you might have a database where you're supposed to put a phone number in. And somebody might, instead of putting in a phone number, put in a zip code. You ever do that? You type in a form and you hit tab and you're in the wrong place and you type the zip code and show the phone number or something like that. So what you'd like is you'd like the database to say, phone number must be, you know, area code dash or whatever, right? So the input mask tells you the format. It says it must be number, dash, number, dash, that sort of thing. That's one of those sort of sugar that you put on the top of the database to actually make it useful. It's sort of the basic idea of the database,
And then there are all the things you do around it. And that's one. Just like when you learn to program, you learn to protect from yourself. When you call some routine to check, to call the function to check to see if it was passed a reasonable value. Because after a while, you'll forget and pass it some unreasonable value, and it'll do something silly. So it's the same sort of thing. The validation stuff. Okay. So, here's an example of thinking through how to build a database. So far we've just been sort of learning the lingo. I'm not expecting you to say, oh yes, okay, good. Give me a database on the But let me show you an example, and then you'll show me an example, and then we'll do it all. Okay, so here's one example. It's the registrar example. So I want to know which students are in which courses. So what you do when you have to do this is you say, okay, well, what kind of things do I have in this world? Students and courses, that's pretty easy, right? So when they teach people how to do analysis of requirements, they teach them to use yellow highlighters and highlight the things, right? If I give you a description of a problem, just highlight the things in the problem. It's not the only way to get started, but it's not a bad way to get started if you're sitting there on an exam going, I've got to build a database for what? You can just start highlighting things, and those things are going to be tables when we're done. Okay, so we're going to have a table for students, and we're going to have a table for courses. Okay, now, without reference to what's up there, if you can manage to forget it, what do you need to know about a student if you're a registrar?
Name.
You got to know their name, right? Well, what do you have to know about their name?
Their personal
name.
Separately?
Yes. Yeah.
Why? It can get really confusing if people have the same personal name.
Yeah.
In the same database.
You can
say someone's in a course or in the wrong course.
Okay, but I might have like Sarah, and Sarah, right? And so whether I put them together as one field or separately, I'm still going to be confused.
Yeah.
So why would I want to separate them?
So that you can eventually sort by last name.
Sort by last name, right? Okay. What about middle initials? You didn't tell me about middle initials. Do I have to have four middle names?
Yeah.
What about junior and the third? Can I just make those like, I mean, this is going to get really complicated, right? Are junior and the third, can I have a third and a junior also? No. Okay. Do I have to keep Mr. and Ms. and Mrs. and, you know, doctor? Yeah, we actually have students in these classes with PhDs. Second time I walked in to teach LDS leadership there, going around the room, I was like, you know, what's your background? I guess the person with the PhD, I was like, why am I standing here and you're sitting there? Okay, what else do I need to know about students?
Contact
information. Like I have some broad contact information?
Contact information.
Like what?
Street address.
Street address, okay, but now do I need to know the street separate from the house number?
No.
No, okay, so there are some things I can skip, right, if I can't think of a use for them. Okay, if I screw that up and later think of a use for it, it's going to be really painful. Right, so it's well worth talking to someone else about your design before you code it, because otherwise you're going to be fixing it for a while. Right, and so once you start fixing it, you'll break other things because one part of the database knows about other parts of the database. Okay, so it's a little messy that way. Okay, so we can go on for a long time, but what do we need to know about courses? What's that? Who teaches? Good. So we need to know who teaches them. What do we need to know about them?
Their name.
First name and last name. Okay, all that stuff. That seems kind of wasteful. I already have a student table that has all the same stuff in it. So I'm going to put my professors in the student table? No? Why not? But they're people. Isn't it really just a person table?
Can you have a student where they are student or
Yeah. And you just have a person table, and I can add one more field that says whether they're a student or a professor. Like that.
Yeah.
Okay, that might make things a little bit easier. So now all I have to do is put the primary key from the person table into, see what that primary key is used before? Got it? And when I do that, that field is called a foreign key. The field that references a primary key in some other table is called a foreign key. So a table has only one primary key. One of its fields is the way records in this table are referred to, but it can refer to many other tables, and those are all foreign keys. So a table can have only one primary key. Yes? But if I refer in this table to another table, that reference is called, that field that refers is called a foreign key. It's a field that refers to a primary key in some other table. And because I can refer to another table more than once, I can refer to this table and to that table, then I could have two foreign keys in the same table with a primary key on.
So if you use, for example, the student or faculty field that we were talking about, and that you use that field in your person table, and then in some other table, that would be considered foreign key.
I'm not sure I understood that. So we're going to actually see an example of this in a minute.
I didn't phrase it well, sorry.
So I think the answer is no. Let me try and say again what I mean.
Okay.
I have a table, you were telling me, that describes a course. The course has a professor. And instead of putting all the stuff about the professor in that table, I'm just going to put a reference, the value of the primary key, in that table for the professor. And then I'll do that for every course. Every course will have one of these. And then that's essentially a pointer. It points at the other table. It points at a particular record in the other table. And we call any such field a foreign key. Okay, it's just a little bit.
Because a professor could be a student also, might it be better to have a student field and a professor field?
You mean a student table and a professor table?
No, a field, professor.
So you're thinking that if I could record the fact that someone is a student and a professor at the same time. Yes?
Well, I think that's how we were doing it. Or you, right.
Yes, so I might be both or neither or just, yes.
Right.
So I could do separate fields for this if, in fact, my university allowed professors to be students.
Okay.
Which some universities might not, mm-hmm. In which case I could just use one field, okay. Is professor or student. In fact, I'll show you a cute way to use no field in a little while. Which is why I was having trouble with it, because the real solution has no field.
Okay.
But for now, you can think of it as having one, and then you can have two. Okay, so you're with me on courses, but you haven't told me enough yet. You told me courses have professors, and that goes to foreign keys. What else do courses have?
Course numbers.
So what's a course number? Give me an example.
LDSC 690.
So is that LDSC and 690 separately, or is that LDSC and then 6 and then 90? You know, the 6 has a meaning.
Yeah, but there's 690 courses all over the university in different fields.
There are, and the meanings are different.
Yeah.
All over the university of the 6.
Yeah.
So 6 here means a course that can be taken without prerequisite. It does not require having completed the 600 level courses. But we actually never tell people that. That's what it means. So, how do you want it? Do you want an LDSC and 690?
I'm welcome.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I'm waiting for other people to jump in.
What's that? All together, just LDSC 690. Okay, good. So, the LDSC 690. What else do I need to know about course?
The main section.
The section number?
Cross reference.
That's interesting. What time it meets?
Where
it meets? Well, there's cross reference.
Whether it's required or whether it's prerequisite.
How many prerequisites could a course have? How many cross-holds do you spin a course in?
6 to 10.
Yeah. A number is a number, yes? There's no fixed upper limit. Okay, now, where are we going to put the students? Do we put the students in the course table, or do we put the course in the students table? What's that?
I read a join. No, you don't put either anywhere.
What? Well, where do I record which students are taking which classes?
Student 6 is taking class A. But how do you make that relation? Does it have to say somewhere in the student's record that they're taking LDS certificate?
Yes, good.
Or
would
you do a query in the LDS
certificate? So you would put the course, you would put the unique ID for the course, the primary key for the course, in the student's record. How many courses could a student take?
An unlimited number.
An unlimited number. It's just our job. Yeah, just ask you a joke. You can get a PhD and stay forever. That's going to be a problem, isn't it? Because I'm only allowed, remember the bit about anatomy atomic? That's really going to bother us.
Would you have like a course 1 field, a course 2 field, a course 3 field?
Up to course unlimited. That wouldn't... Yeah, you could do that if they weren't unlimited. Mm-hmm. If they were limited, that would work.
If, like, saying we can't take 12 courses.
Can't take any more than 12, but, you know, somebody's going to, like... There's a special rule that says that if you get an incomplete in a course, you could leave the incomplete in your record permanently and take some other course, you know, so... What do I do while you're taking the 13th course? The registrar is, like, you know, holding the thing together with bailing wire and something. That's not what they do. So, but the easy solution is we'll just put the students on the course table, right? I mean, how many students can take the course?
Let's say 25.
Okay, fine. We'll have 25 students in our course table. Actually, 27, though, because they increased the number of students that can take the course because two more people wanted to take it. We limited it to 25, but I increased it to 27. Oh my God, we have to go back and redesign the table.
Do you allow that expansion
wrong? Well, you can do it, but it's just like having gotten the design wrong in the first place. It's messy, it breaks a lot of things. Yeah, we probably shouldn't do this. And not only that, there are some courses that don't allow 27 students, they only allow 15 students. They'll have a whole bunch of blanks. And a really well-designed database doesn't have any blanks. That's one of the, like, elegance rules that come later. Yeah. So the blanks are, you lose style points. So we need a solution to this, but somebody said it, right? There's a relation between a student and a course, right? Okay, so if you're in OPSC 690, that's a fact, right? Things don't have to be physical things. That's a thing. Yeah. I mean, on airlines, you have people getting seats, right? What do you call it? You call it a booking. You refer to a booking as if it's a thing, right? Hey, I got a booking! And you probably don't say that very often. I mean, you wouldn't think it unusual if somebody said it. You think of a booking as a thing. Hey, I got a seat in the class. Okay. It's a seats table. This student in that class, this student in that class, this student in that class. You know what? We define an additional table that holds the relationship we want. We can record any number of students in any number of classes. It will work beautifully. We give that table a primary key, which we ignore. We just do it for the sake of what we have to. And what goes in it? Two foreign keys. And nothing else. Does this make sense? You'll be nodding like this. This will come up over and over and over again. It'll like drive you nuts in the homework, it'll appear on exams. This is the key. Got it? Okay, so we started out, there are only two kinds of things in the world, students and courses, and we found out there are three kinds of things in the world, students, courses, and a relationship between the two, which is convenient because of the bizarre way in which relational databases work, three-quarter table. So here's what it looks like. I got a table for students. I got a table for courses.
And I have what I call here an enrollment table. So here in this course ID, I've got this student ID. Right? And in fact, students get grades in courses. I can record the student's grade right in that same table. So I call this relationship in this context an enrollment. It doesn't matter what I call it. That's just a useful way to get a label on it. Okay? And then I've gone one step further, and I've said that I keep using this department thing over and over and over again. I'll just make a table for departments, and I won't have to write out electrical engineering every time. I can just write double E. Right? And then if up here I have double E, then if I ever want to print it out, I can print out electrical engineering instead of double E because I just look it up in the table. Yeah?
Oh, do you have to pay the bill that there's nothing connecting to the department
field? Oh, bless you. Yes, there is. So, this is the primary key of department ID, and this is the foreign key, and therefore, the one. This is the primary key in the department table, right? And the values from this primary key field appear in this field here, which happens by coincidence to have the same name, which makes it very easy to remember that these things are the same, but it's not required. Okay? Yes? What's that?
What you said before, that was the primary key, and then you said something else.
This is the primary key.
Right. Uh-huh.
The values here are values that can appear there. That's therefore called the foreign key. This field, department ID,
right. Yes,
the foreign key.
That's it.
Yeah. This is the table version. And we did all this with hand waving 5 minutes ago. How this didn't change. We just got a table in front of us. With me? Okay, now, looking up the right element here when you need it is the fundamental action in a database. That operation is called join. So, let's just take the simple example. I've got the department ID, and I've got a department ID there, and I want to make a table that has the department name spelled out. So, I just add an additional column to this first table in which I have included the spelled out name. I mean, it's a really simple operation if you look at it. The resulting table has all the information that was in both of the two tables. Okay? Pretty clear how that works? Now, when I do a join, I must join a foreign key to a primary key. So here, the foreign key is department ID, and the primary key is department ID. And the way you do it is you take a value in the foreign key field, you look it up in the primary key field, you take the entire row of this table, which happens to only have one other thing in it, and you add it to this. Now, the fact that I happen to write it next to it here rather than over there means nothing. The order is unimportant in the table. Yeah.
Is there a way to mark the new information? So, say, like color coding the original file and then the new information that's brought in the different.
It's an interesting question. So, let me try answering it this way and see if it's a good enough answer. The new information doesn't exist, it never actually gets created. It's a figment of your imagination. Once I give you 3 plus 4, and the answer is 7. 7 never actually exists. It's just 3 plus 4 that exists. I only told you 3 plus 4.
I never actually have to go get a 7. So here, when I say this join that, this table never gets created. It's a conceptual representation.
But
isn't
it merge?
No.
Well, I don't know what merge is, but.
Only merge 5.
Oh, yes, it's 5. So it's not. You're not writing back a new table. You're not taking tables, putting them together, getting a new table. Conceptually, you are. But really, what you're going to do is say, join this to this, and get rid of this, this, and this. Print the rest, but only the lines that have 3s. And that'll get done. And it turns out that you wouldn't actually want to join this to that first and then get rid of all those lines. You'd want to get rid of all those lines and then join them. That'd be more efficient. But you never worry about that. The system does it. So you do actually produce the final result after many of these machinations. But you don't, the intermediate results, which I'm showing you here, don't ever get created. But you're specifying it as if they did. Okay. All right, now, it turns out there are only 3 operations.
Remember in programming, there were only 3 control structures? There's something magic about 3.
There are only 3 operations in a relational database. One operation is join, and it's the only one that's hard. All the rest of them are easy. I know, I knew that join was easy, right? So the rest of them are easier. Okay, so here's an operation you will really love. It's called project. So what you do is you decide which of the fields you want to keep. Remember the fields and the columns? And you just keep them. And you get rid of the rest of them. That's pretty easy, right? Yes? Yeah, okay. The other one, which we call restrict, you decide which of the rows you want to keep, and you just keep them, and you get rid of the rest. Right, so there are only 3 things that I can do. I can take a bunch of tables and put them together. It's not limited to 2. I can take tables and put them together. I can get rid of columns, and I can get rid of rows, and I can't do anything else. I start with tables, I end with tables. Which is why everything comes out of your database looks like a table. Okay, now, if I want to do a project, I simply tell you which things I want to keep, or alternately, which things I want to get rid of. That's it. Alright, so I just do it by the name of the field. If I want to do a restrict, I have to tell you which rows I want to get rid of. Well, I could tell you by primary key which rows to keep, or I could specify it by content. I could say, let's only keep the people in the history department, or let's only keep the people named John.
Okay, so for project, you're getting the
field,
and for the script, you're getting
the
correct.
Okay. You got it? So you see how we were flipping between these 3 different terminologies. We've got rows and columns, we've got records and fields, and we're going to pick up a 3rd one, which is the relational algebra terminology. Okay? Tuples and attributes. Okay. So, you might have originally thought of something like this. This is kind of where we started. Where I've got this person who's got taken all these courses, and so John Arrows is taking information technology, and John Arrows is also taking communication, and so this records similar information, but it's got everything kind of munged together. So now I have to write John Arrows twice here. After a double electrical engineering. So having it all stored in one table is what most people do when they first buy access. They say, oh, I'm going to make a database. They want to make a table. And then they get rid of columns and rows because they've got those 2 operations. But the join operation is conceptually complex.
You have one student who has the same student ID number, but 2 different emails.
coach on their own.
They're both John Arrows. Yeah, John has two email addresses.
But why would one class pick up?
So you got the idea why this is a bad idea. Because nothing prevents that, right? If I have a normalized representation, which is what you call it when you break it into separate tables, this can't happen. Because John Arrows has an email address. But here, John Arrows in one line could have one email address, John Arrows in another line could have another email address. Indeed, we could have gotten the spelling of Arrows wrong. And the database wouldn't have known any better. Right. So this is a bad approach to code yourself because of duplication. So there's this potential inconsistency. I'm not really making this up. Actually, I have a slide. Right? You got potential inconsistency. You have to look through everything to make sure you got everything instead of just looking through one table and finding the thing you're looking for. Right. So the tables get much larger. If you're denormalized, when you're normalized, in the way we've been talking about, then you get more rapid search. You can get more rapid updates because you only have to put the update in once. If John Arrows updates his email address, you only have to update it in one place. So you pick up a little efficiency there. And you only have to store everything once. Except, now you have to store all those foreign keys. The foreign keys really are taking up extra space. The thing on why we would want to do this is breaking the tables up, so that's called normalization. Now, the relational algebra allows the people who build databases to reorder the computation and prove that they will get the same results, and hence they can find the most efficient way of doing it and still use their database, which will perform the computation more efficiently than somebody else's database. So this is referred to as database optimization. The relational algebra is an algebra that operates on relations, which we used to call rows. We used to call tables. So relations are tables. Every relation is a set of attributes, which we used to call fields. And a relation has many tuples, which is sets of attributes, which we used to call records or rows. So this is the third terminology. This is the abstract math terminology. And the only real value of this is, that's why it's called a relational database, just because it relies heavily on the relational algebra for efficiency. Okay. Now, there are two ways to do this. We essentially discovered that one big table wasn't the right thing to do. We started out with the idea that we were going to have a student table that had everything about students, including classes. Okay. And after a while, we figured there were some problems with that. So that is sort of a deconstructionist view, right? You can start with some unified view of the world and sort of poke it, see where it has problems. Alternatively, you can start with a already deconstructed view of the world. So you just say, look, people have first names and last names. People have street addresses and cities. Well, I know the street address goes with the city, and I know the first name goes with the last name, and then names go with cities, and so we'll just put them together. And you keep putting them together until you put something together where you say, oh, those things really shouldn't be together. Right? Because there might be more than one such relationship, like students taking courses. You can't really put that together because there's not one student taking one course. So you can either do bottom-up or you can do top-down. If you do bottom-up, then you can get to problems of sort of medium scale. So you could have actually gotten to where we got to today. If you do top-down, you can do much larger scale because the human brain thinks in terms of abstraction. Right? We're really good at thinking abstractly without all those messy details. And then picking one part and working out the details. So a common way to do this
is with what are called entity relationship diagrams. How many people take an OBSA 670? Have you done ERA diagrams yet?
We didn't have it. I don't
think you'll never have it?
No, I took it last semester.
And it wasn't there?
Do you remember anything about it?
Yeah. We never had anything about
it. Okay. I shall speak with those who teach 670 and update every year of them. And in the meantime, I'll teach you a little ER diagram. So entity relationship diagrams allow you to take complex problems, think abstractly about them, use a graphical representation, so you can use the sort of visual reasoning capability that people are so good at, and move away from this fail. So for example, we could say that every student is associated with some department. We could say that every enrollment, which is a student taking a course, getting a grade, has a student, and it has a course. But we can make much more complex things. For example, every course might be associated with a department, right? So we could keep this going for quite a long time. So the way that this is done is we simply draw boxes to represent entities in this broader sense. The entities that you can actually point at, physical entities like students, and entities that are more abstract, like active enrolling in a class. And then we represent the relationship with lines. We name the lines only so that we could reason about them, but we don't ever actually use that. And we say which aspects of a course are important to us for this purpose. These are the attributes of the entity in entity relationship model. Now, if you do that long enough, you go crazy. You get things like this. Now, this is a relatively modest ER diagram, but the nice thing is, once you've done that, so you know, you can learn how to draw these, once you've done that, every one of these is a table. So if I ask you how many tables there, you could just count the boxes, and that's how many tables, right? And then if I ask you, what are the fields in my table, you could just look at the attributes, and those are the names of your fields. So it allows you to not have to use you don't have to draw tables like this with some sample values in them, and thus you can sort of get more of a page and see more of one side. Now, there are all these funny things here that, you know, it's got a little triangle with a circle and a bar on this side. And so what those refer to is different kinds of relationships. So many students take many classes. So what this means is that here's a student who's taking two classes. Here are two students who are taking the same class. Right? So many to many, this is one kind of a relationship. Here's a one-to-one relationship. The person with this name lives at this address. And here's a one-to-many relationship. So I've got one, what's that? That one department has many courses, but no course has many departments in this school. So this was students and courses. Now, when you see these kinds of relationships, which get coded with these symbols, I know teaching ER relationships is correct. I would have remembered which of those is the many side. I believe this is the many side, and that's the one side. Right, that's a one, and this is a many. Coming out of the many there. So the different relationship types are being conveniently encoded there. And the reason why you do that is because many to many is generally encoded as a table that has two foreign keys in it. That's the sort of standard instantiation of this. One to one is put them together in the same table. There's no sense having them in separate tables and having to do a join if you're always going to just put the same thing together. And one to many is the one side is the primary key and the many side is the foreign key. So the many-to-many is like students and courses. So you create a new table in which you have two foreign keys. Or it's people on airplane. So you have a reservation number. Okay. Y'all allowed me to run 10 minutes over without taking a break. You should remand yourself for having done so. Since it's not hard for me to stand up here, but it's progressively harder for you to sit there. And so you should always feel free to, like, stop me or get up and go out and just leave the room. 10 minutes. Thank you.
that links to Paige's video, links to video. And of course, there's a room for that.
Yeah.
So it didn't show up correctly, but it can.
I don't know how we're going to do right now.
out with the team on this problem. Signing out, yeah. Getting permission, even such a.
Oh, you're liar.
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of interesting things over break. One is it turns out that half the people that took 670 actually did get ear modeling, and the other half didn't, and the other half hasn't yet taken it and doesn't know if they're going to get ear modeling. So one of the things I need to do is go back and sort it out with the 670 instructors whether we need to adhere it. If we do, I can put a segment towards the end of the semester on ear modeling so that we don't lose that. So you don't have to get. The idea here was to connect to that which you have learned or will learn, and if we don't have that nailed down, we'll fix that. The second thing is I have a $5 bet on whether you can answer the following question. So I voted, I bet in favor of you, by the way. So how many people have never created a database in which you used a join before? Define a foreign key. You're going to cost me $5 if you can. Very good. Okay. Yeju, you get $5. So Yeju's claim is the primary key, foreign key thing is a little abstract here. This is the most obvious. Anybody else want to save me? Nobody's going to save me.
A foreign key is a reference to a primary key in another table.
Cool. 250?
Yeah.
She gets a dollar.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. So it's really, really hard to do databases without actually doing databases. So here's an exercise. And we're actually going to do this now in class. We're going to design a database to match passengers to rides over spring break. Now, I used to have a project in this class, and we did in class, in which we would match people who wanted to ride on corporate jets to corporate jets that were going someplace. And the class would spend like half the class trying to figure out like what's important in a corporate jet. Does it matter how much they weigh? You know, if they didn't take a shower this morning, is that a big deal? If they got the big leaks on board the jet. So anyway, Jimmy Lin came up with the right variant of this, which is we're matching rides in cars with people who want to go someplace on spring break. Just the same with the corporate jet, they're up there, fly lower, and they go slower. Right? And the drivers aren't nearly as well qualified. Okay, so spring break's coming up, so that's what we're going to do. So we're going to design a database to match passengers with rides over spring break. There's how it works. You start a business in which the people who have rides going someplace over spring break and want to take somebody, they phone in, they tell you where they're going from, where they're going to, you know, who they are, how much money they want for gas or whatever, and how many people they can take. And whatever else, you know, might be for. And then people call up looking for rides, and they're thinking, I'm here, it'd be nice to go like someplace in Florida, you know, I can't leave before Tuesday, and you got to find them some rides. You see the problem? You can actually make money with what you're going to do in class tonight. Right? I mean, spring break's in, what, 2 weeks? So, if you
if you just work out all the details, you could become a rich famous advisor. Okay, so how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to have to decide on the tables that we need. And so to do that, we'll focus on what kinds of questions will be asked. And for those questions, there'll be certain kinds of data that you will need to answer the questions, and that will tell you what data you need. And then we'll think about how to put that into tables. You'll either have a whole bunch of facts, and you'll think, oh, I can put my facts together. Or you'll have some big ideas, and you'll carve them up until you get to tables if you like. So you can do top down or bottom up. This is the problem of a scale where you can approach it intuitively without having ER modeling, and do just about as well. If you did the ER modeling, you just line up drawing the same place. Okay. Then, once you get the data, you'll design the queries. So what you'll do is you'll say, so now I've got this table and that table. We'll just do a join with this foreign key and that primary key, and we'll get this conceptually this new table. We'll slice these parts out, we'll slice those parts out, and then that will leave us with this, which will be the answer. So the answer will be a table. Right? A table of, for example, people going places that this person might want to go at a price that they could afford to pay. Okay, and so we'll have to get the joins and the projects and the restricts, and we'll have to know where the primary and the foreign keys are. Yes? Okay, so that's a conceptual problem. Now, when you finish that, then we'll actually code it in Access, fingers on the keyboard. So when you leave class tonight, you will have a database which you can use to make money. See where we're going with this? So we're going to take those abstract ideas and we're going to make them concrete. Okay, how are we going to do this? Work in groups of three or four. Now, how do you pick a group here? I don't care. But if you're thinking that there's somebody you might want to do a project with, you could work with them on this, and if you're ready to punch them at the end, then you don't want to do a project with them, okay? So, or if you don't know, you could just pick somebody at random, and sure enough, you might find you like them and want to do a project with them. Okay, so, think about using this as trying people out for projects. Spend not more than 5 minutes on the data requirements, just the brainstorming data requirements. Everybody can be writing separately, or people can be shouting out ideas, or, well, whispering out ideas, because it won't be then, make your tables and queries for 15 minutes, and then try to explain to another group what you did, and have them explain to you what they did. And you will find that you understand what they say, probably, and they thought of something you didn't. That was important. I mean, surely they will have thought of a lot of things you didn't think. You know, you could have done a lot of different ways. But they will have thought of something you didn't that was important about this problem. With me? Okay. And if you're not creative, you can just stay where you are and just work with those two folks. Anyway, okay, that's it. So there's no access to this. So the next thing is actually. Is Rachel Donahue speaking late?
I'm just getting to listen.
Well,
Don't try to change or do more structure in the first 5 minutes. Just get ideas on paper. Don't try to run that. What your tables are, work on the structure of the tables, and the tables are defined by how will they use, right? So think about what the queries are as you think about the tables. Think about what kinds of questions you're trying to answer, and don't spend more than 5 minutes on any one problem. If you're working on something, you just can't figure it out, go on to some other aspect of the problem. The problem has lots of parts to it.
Right, so... Yeah.
already here, and I'm just waiting.
Okay, now about 3 minutes left.
But in the time of, it's not, 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 it's not,
You guys switch for me? If you haven't switched yet, please switch. Happy. Yes, if you have switched, then that's fine. You can take your check. Switch who's talking? Okay.
Match to destination. We have words. Also. I want to go here, I am going here. And the person said, all of these people going there in this car. So that's how you know it's good. Five people in the car, and the line of the car.
Does the bookings make sense in addition to the
if you don't do the bookings, you can't book anywhere where people need to know. You haven't seen them in a call site.
Okay, very good. How many people thought that was more useful than having spent a similar amount of time alone working on the project? Okay, so can you explain to me why when you work on your homework, you're no longer working on it alone? I mean, there's no requirement. What's that? Like, we haven't taught you about information technology? Sure you have. How many people here are working at 4 in the morning? Come on, somebody's working at 4 in the morning. You're not working at 4 in the morning?
No, I am.
You are? Raise your hand. So, you can find ways to work with each other, and the more you do of that, the more you'll learn, right, in the same amount of time. For most people. Now, some people prefer differently, and that's fine, but thinking about the homework and thinking about particular projects is something you're supposed to have individual parts of is not nearly as productive as the sort of thing we're doing today. Okay, if we can return to our seats, anybody want to nominate one of the people that they heard from as having it wired, just done, ready to go, type it in? Nobody? Okay, so this should give you a clue of how complex the design process is for one of these things. So I'll give you an example of a database that I built to solve one part of this problem. And one good strategy to use is to don't try to solve the whole problem the first time, because you know that whatever you do the first time won't work very well. So just try to solve a part of the problem the first time, understand that solution, and then try to solve the full problem. Right? It's not bad to sort of walk before you run, because what you were finding as you were doing this was there was no limit to the complexity that you could cook up, right? So if you just simplify the problem, solve the simple problem, then it's hard to go back and add complexity to the simple solution, but it's easy to go back and design the complex solution then, because your brain's been through one step or one loop around. Okay, so this is our file called y.mdb, and you can download this yourself to your computer. You go to the place where you get the slides and just click on sample database. Put it on your M drive, please. I put it onto my M drive. Here's my M drive, which has got a lot of stuff on it from the ancient past. And I'm going to double click on it to open it. And it's got a little key symbol. Now, if you have a PC with you and prefer to use it and have Access installed on it, that's fine. You can use that. Now, I get a warning when I do this that says unsafe expressions are not blocked. You don't want to block unsafe expressions. And so what's going on here, as a couple of people observed, there are certain things you want to do in this database that you cannot do with the relational logic. It's not a matter of just putting tables together with joins and projections and tricks. You have to actually count out how many people are in this car. So you need a function to count. So you end up putting programs on top of the database to do things with the tables. Databases are only useful when you want the table to be the result. And so I don't have any such things in here, but it's asking me if they were there, would I allow them to run? Because if I allow them to run, boy, this program could do anything. But I wrote it, so I'm happy with it. I don't want to block the unsafe expression, so I'll say no. It says it might hurt me, and I'll say yeah, okay. And it comes up with queries, but I want to go to tables. So I just clicked on tables. Now, it's okay if you want to spend the entire time up here and you don't want to follow along with your own. You'll eventually need to load it on your own. But I want to show you, I walk you through how I built this. So I'm just going to pick the bookings. And what I do, actually, let me just make a new booking table. So I go to create a table in design view. Actually, let me not start with booking, because let's start with person. So I create a new table in person. Okay, create a new table in design view. I didn't do anything here. Now, what's the first field going to be called? It's by convention, the first field is the primary key. What do I want to call a primary key that identifies the person?
Person.
How about person ID? Good idea. We'll call person ID. Okay. Now, what sort of data type should I have? It will offer me text, but I can click in there and pick something else. What do you think I should pick?
Number.
How'd you guess? Okay, number. I'll pick number. So person ID will be a number. Now, I can't have dashes and stuff in it anymore. If I wanted something with dashes in it, I'd have to have like a string. So if it was a social security number with the dashes, that'd be a string. Okay, so person ID will be a number. What else do I need to know about people?
Name.
First name, last name, or just name? Last name, first name. Okay, so I'm going to do first name, last name. Because remember, the order doesn't make any difference. So it's just convenient for me to think of them in that order. But they're not really in any order. First name should be a text, so we'll just leave it alone. And last name? What else do I want to know about people? Okay, phone number. So phone number should be a number, right? Let me try that again. Phone number should be a number, right?
Yeah.
Bullshit. I'll try another answer.
Oh.
Great, good answer. Okay, so phone number will be text. Isn't that confusing? We call it a phone number, but it's got dashes in it, so we make it text. Those dashes aren't numbers. Well, okay, you could run it all together if you just really have a reason. Yeah. You could make it a number, run it all together.
Gender.
Okay. And gender would be a text, okay? It would allow a wide range of genders. Okay, any more? That's enough for people? Okay, good. So I'm going to save it, but since I can never remember what I have to save, I'll just close it, and it'll say, oh, you foolish person, don't you want to save that? I'll say yes, and it'll let me name it, and I'm going to call it practice, but you can call it anything you like. You can call it people. Okay, so I call it practice. Okay, no primary key is defined. Oh my gosh, do I want a primary key now? Cancel. Okay, I'm going to go back and use my right arrow, just to the left of person ID, and select primary key, or my right button. Select primary key. So I went to person ID, just to the left of it, right click, select primary key. And I get a little picture of a key, isn't that cute? Okay? Yes.
I guess it's not because it's only like 5 fields, but if it was really, really had like 50 different ways to identify a person, would you want to choose one of those fields as the primary key?
Yes, if it's unique, it's...
Like you could use like a phone number?
You could if there were no two people who lived in the same place. For example.
Well, it's helpful. Everybody's helpful.
Yes, as long as it wasn't my mom. But she probably doesn't need a ride for spring break. Which is already in. Okay? Okay, good. So, we can save it. Which I do by doing that because I can never remember what has to be saved. And since it didn't save it last time, it doesn't remember that I wanted to call it practice if you want to call it.
Oh, wait, didn't you want to say passenger?
You might have wanted passenger and driver in separate tables. The passenger and driver are both people, and they both have names, and they both have phone numbers, and they both have genders, and so I don't know, whoever was telling me all this stuff kept telling me what to put in, and I just did. So there are many ways to design these. There's not one right way. Okay, so I'm going to hit OK, and I called mine practice, and then I just double click on practice. And it allows me a chance to type in a person ID, and as soon as I do, it creates a new line for the next one. And I can hit a tab to go across. What's their name for a person?
Sarah.
Sarah? Okay, last name?
Well, Smith,
because
she's not here.
Okay. Hey, Sarah. A number?
5555.
Okay, gender? Yes. Okay. You can see the importance of having automatic checking of little fields to see if they might do something valid, right? Okay, and then we can have two. Sally Rides, who is an astronaut. Give me a phone number for NASA.
Anybody work
at that? Okay. And we can do that for a long time. Right. You got the idea?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So why don't you pick another table and make it yourself? So that was a person table or a driver table or whatever you wanted it to be. And now you can create a different table and make it up yourself. Get used to creating it, saving it. Don't make it any more complicated than we just did. Don't put in everything, you know, whether a car has a cigarette lighter or... Do a car table, maybe. Yeah, if you have questions, just raise your hand and your junior will come on and we'll tell you we don't know either.
Yeah, so come down here to
do a data type system that you know that's rich like that's not just here, but
Oh, yes, no, and maybe or something?
Or like full of standards.
Oh, sure. So for now, you can just use text, and those are people typing in text, and then later you can create an input pass, so then you allow the person to yes, or
okay, everybody got a table for you, and stuff at them?
How's it go?
You do? Yes? No? More time? What's that? Couple more minutes. We're just trying to learn the finger motions on the keyboard here and how they correspond to the ideas.
It's unnecessary.
Okay, very good. We have enough fun with that?
No, I'm just going.
Okay, so let's knock that off and come back up to the front of the room. And I will show you my person table, which you can see if you downloaded the database, and if you didn't write over it. I've got a person, that's new number one, is John Smith. Now you can see I didn't make a distinction of first and last name, so I can't, for example, alphabetize my last name anymore, because I don't know what the last name is. And these are campus addresses and phone numbers. Okay? And so you, if you want to, that's what I get when I double-click on it. If I want to see the design view, I can right-click on it and hit design view. And I get, you can see I've got a passenger number, which is the primary key. I've got a name, address, and phone number, which are all things, right? So there's nothing really any fancier than what we've talked about. And that's true for all of them. The ride is a little bit interesting. I have a departure date and a return date, and those are date times. You can put date and time in a single field. I'm only keeping dates, as it turns out. I've got cost as a currency. That just causes it to print out correctly and knows, you know, that it should have two decimal points after zero and a dollar sign. Otherwise, that cost can't get negative. You don't think that. Okay. You can ask me any number.
On the, what's the driver field on your table, the ride?
I'm sorry, the?
Yeah, on the ride table.
The ride. You want to know about the driver?
Yeah. That's
the person.
Why is he a member?
What's that?
Who's a member?
It's a foreign key.
Foreign key number. Okay.
That's a primary key for that person.
So you have a driver, well, that's on your person table.
Isn't that cute?
Okay. All right. Yeah, but that's a passenger number, not...
But that has called passenger number in the person table. Okay, so it was called person number, I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I couldn't find a driver anywhere. All right.
Okay. So, and I just screwed up and closed it. So it'll be back in a minute. And I will show you the next how to create a query. But you are now entitled to a 5-minute break. You should take a break. Education theory suggests that if you stand up during the break, you will be less likely to fall asleep during the next part of the class.
Thank you.
5 hours?
No, I certainly get 3.5. If there's no traffic at all on my drive back from my show, I can make it a little over 3 hours.
Do you go to Harrisburg?
You can go up to Harrisburg, or you can go up, you can go out to Frederick and go across 70 and go up that way. Kind of two ways to go. Yeah, this morning I drove down here this morning actually. I drove through Harrisburg and almost down Baltimore. And I'm down here and about 3 hours and 20 minutes
this morning.
There's a wizard that'll make things easier for you, and you can just type directly into tables and it'll guess what to call things for you. So there are lots of ways of doing it. So the way I'm showing you is sort of one standard way that brings you through one way of thinking about it. But you don't have to do it that way. You can do it any way you want. So we're going to use the Create a Query Design View, and it gives me the option to add tables. So I can take my booking table, my person table, or my ride table. Practice is bogus here. And so not having any better idea, you can always delete them. I just add them all at once. So now I've got my booking table, my passenger table, and my person table. And it turns out you can't do anything until you close this little window. So that's always the thing that every time I go back to this after a year, I'm like, oh, I forgot to close the window. So close that window, make that full screen, pull this part down if you want a little more room, and now you can see that you've got the booking, the person, and the ride table, and you can see that the passenger number is connected to the passenger number, and the ride number is connected to the ride number, the e-bone is connected to the collarbone, and the ball things are the primary keys, and the things that are connected by lines to the ball things are the form keys. It all becomes clear. If I showed you this picture, I couldn't like save $2.50. It's there, by the way. Okay. But it's a little hard to see this line goes behind this thing. So we can just kind of stretch it out any way we feel like. Like magic? What's that? I just grab them across, right? I'm over there. Here. There. What's that?
If you have
booking
that person and ride.
That?
Then you can like move right up and
then see
like that.
Yeah. Okay. So, you remember the ER diagrams? So if you want to draw an ER diagram, open access, create the tables, stick them where you want them, and hit print. And this is actually what people turn in when they're doing database projects. When they want an ER diagram, they just do a little screenshot of that. Lay it out the way they want. Okay. Now you'll notice this one over here has got more stuff in it than there's room for. And it looks really weird. Right? But you can just make it bigger. Right? Okay. So now the only problem is this problem with the driver. right? So that driver, I want to connect the driver to the person table. And I want to connect the driver to which field of the person table? And your number, which is a misnamed primary key, as has been pointed out. Yes? Okay? So if I do that, I will have a mess. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to show tables, go get another copy of the person table, add it, and take the driver, see, that's what happens if we don't have close. Take the driver and connect to the passenger number there. So I have two people, right? The passenger people and the driver people. Got it? See how this works? You're not limited to a single copy of a
table. You
just reopened
the person table.
I just told her I wanted the person table twice. I could have started at the beginning and just added the person table twice. We would have gotten two copies of it. Oh, I drew the line myself.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, if I wanted to draw the line for passenger number to cost, I could do it. Very good. I got a line for passenger number to cost, which really screwed me up. So I can click on it and delete it. Got it? Yes, got it? Got all those lines drawn? Okay. So now what I want to do is I want to display, my query is going to be the people who I might want to get a ride with. That's what I'm going to query here. Okay? That's what my tables were designed for. I knew that you didn't, but that's what I designed the tables to answer. So I want to know who can I get a ride with. I already know who I am, right? So I'm not going to ask about that. But I can start out by saying which driver will I be driving with? So I just take the name of the driver and I drop it here. And I got the name from the person one table. Now there are two tables. There's a table called person and a table called person underscore one. And I drag person underscore one's name down there, so that's what I'm going to get. That's the driver's name. See it? Okay. So I got the driver's name. Maybe I need the driver's phone number. So I can call him on the phone. And I want to know where they're leaving from. I want to know where they're going to. And I want to know when they're leaving. I don't care if they ever come back. And I want to know how much money it's going to cost. Okay? And actually, let's change the question. I want to know who's riding with them. So I'll pick the people riding with them. Okay, so I can see who's riding with which driver to where. Got it?
Get the underscore one again on the first and other second table?
I added the person table twice. The second time it called it person underscore one.
Okay.
Okay. So now I've got this built, and now I can run the query by just going up here and hitting run, which is a little red exclamation mark. So I do run, and there is everybody. So I got Kathy Peters is driving, and John Smith is riding, and it's costing $50. And Chris Smith is driving, and Mary Plank is riding, and it's costing $14. And you can see when they're leaving and where they're going. Yep?
What about
local
passengers?
So I have two different passengers here, John Smith and David Weeks, both riding with Kathy Peters.
Oh, okay.
Right, so this is a denormalized table, right? This table doesn't actually exist anyplace. Right? It was computed from all those normalized tables and displayed as a result. Good eye? Okay, so let's go back to the design view. So I'm just going to go view, design view, and I'm back in the design view. And I actually don't want to display the cost. I just want to only show the things that cost less than $25. So I'll just go to criteria on cost. And do less than 25, and I'll click off of the little show checkbox, and I'll run it again, and now I got the people that are costing less than $25, and I don't show you how much it costs, it just, you know, it's one of the
less than $25 because I'm showing it to you. With me? Okay, good. Where were the joint operations?
Invisible.
They weren't invisible. They were not invisible. Where were they? They were all down the line. That was the joints, right? Okay. Where are the project operations? Projected like you have a light from the top. It's a projector. It's projecting down.
The lower table.
The lower table. It was which things I dragged in. A project we think of often as which things we get rid of. But it think we are which things we drag in. So we start with everything in the joint. And which things do we keep? Yes? Okay. Where was the select operation? The restrict operation, sorry. Is a less than 25 business, right? Good, we're done. That's it. That's access. That's why there's a thing.
Well,
there
might be
things. There might be things.
It might be
like. Questions? Yeah.
What was the middle one again?
Join, project, restrict.
After the Microsoft Office come with this?
Yes. Okay. If you have the full Office suite. I mean, if you just buy Word or something.
Right, but you have Office.
You have Office, you got this. And it's in there waiting for you. All this stuff.
How did you do the join going way back? Between the driver and the passenger.
Okay, I'll undo and show you again.
Yeah, great.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to the design view.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get rid of the person table. Okay, so this is.
Don't you know the theory? How do you get back?
What is it? View, design view. Okay, so we're here. And now I want to add a second person table. So I go to insert, no, to view. Oh.
I thought you right click.
Okay, I right click. And I go to show table. It's a little obscure. And then I get down here and I click on person and I hit add. Okay, and then I hit close here. And I say, I want to take that passenger number and connect it to that driver. Okay, or I put it down here. And then I can, you know, do all your stuff. Did I? Yes.
For me, for the homework assignment is, if we use access for Mac, is that going to mess things up at all because it specifies Windows XP?
The short answer is yes. If you want to carry your Mac to Rebecca at a mutually agreeable time, I'm sure she'd be happy to grade it. But if she can't run it, then she can't grade it. And so you could check to see if she's got a Mac or a friend of the Mac.
I have access to it.
I'm afraid that's what we're doing for just this one assignment. Or you could try it on the Mac. Send it to her, see if it works, and if it doesn't work, do it again in the next piece. I mean, it doesn't take that long to type it in.
I have access to a Windows laptop, it's just would be if I had to buy
it. Yeah, we found that if you change versions, it's just a nightmare. So if everybody uses the same version, we win. Right. Even this one assignment. It's just a very messy moving database.
So is that the same thing using Active 2003
instead of 2007? I guarantee you if you use 2003 to develop, it will run fine in 2007. If you use 2007 and she has 2007 to grade, you'll be okay. But if you try to go from 2007 to 2003...
Unless you save it in that first format.
If there's a save in 2003 format, you're in business.
Okay.
Then you should be fine. So, yeah, if you do it in 2003.
I suppose
on
one
end,
you
reference
what would you usually
use for
Mac? Would you use Access or would you use
something special? Oh, anything. The differences between these systems are in the user interface.
There, you know, the theory of relational databases and the optimization has been worked out pretty well. So if you have access to the Mac, why not use it?
And also, I saw that on the mirror you have SQL view, and how is that?
Aha! Funny you should ask.
I would like to remember.
Funny you should ask. You will regret having said that. But you won't regret it today. You'll regret it next week. Okay, good. So we'll now do the muddiest point. We just all write this with the muddiest point. So, what we just did was visual programming. So we laid out the table, and we used lines to be joins, and checkboxes to be projects, and criteria to be restricts, and we were done. But you could imagine using the programming language that would allow you to say the same thing. So, for example, here is a programming language with the Spike standard. Pretty much everybody implements it, and it's implemented pretty much the same way on every database. They can say things like select last name from students where department equals quiz. So this is the project. Select last name. This is the project. This is the restrict, and there's no join here. But if you said from students, comma, something else, and just put two tables there, that would be join. And you could select last name, comma, something, and that would be a more complex project. Okay. In fact, the restrict is actually technically called select, except select is used in SQL. So way back when, we just renamed all the terminology so it would be restrict, so when you have to do select command, you wouldn't be able to use it. But now it's just confusing. Okay, so that's an example of SQL. So that's an alternative. And anything you can do here, you can do here. Anything you can do here, you can do there. So the beauty of the database programming is that you can do visual programming and have the full power of the database. Okay? Whereas that's very hard, it's not practical to do in something like JavaScript. Okay, now you can go one step further. This has been a research problem where people have said things like, we'll just have a microphone and we'll say, show me the last names of students in quiz, and it generates this and issues it, which it does right about 10% of the time, and the other 90% of the time, it says, are you calling from Cleveland Park? That's what those things that you're talking to on the phone are doing, is they're trying to take what you're saying and make them into terms. In fact, there used to be a phone in this room.
Say a city and state or enter a zip code.
Hawaii.
Sorry, I didn't get that. Say a city and state or enter a zip code. For example, say Dallas, Texas.
Hawaii.
Sorry, I didn't hear you. Say a city and state or enter a zip code. For example, say Boston, Massachusetts. If you're done here, say main menu.
Hello, Hawaii.
Sorry, I still didn't get that.
You get the idea, right? Okay, so that's natural language access to this. Yep. So you've seen the three different ways of telling it what you want, right? Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
computer will switch in 14. Okay. So, the select command, you first choose the columns, then you choose the rows based on their context, and then if you want to do a join, you can just put two columns together. Yeah? Okay. So you can imagine doing this graphically and then writing out the SQL. In fact, in Access someplace, there's a command to show the SQL for the thing you designed
basically. So what's the purpose of using SQL?
Well, because Access has, you know, Access looks like this, and Oracle doesn't look like that. So Oracle will read SQL. Everybody will read SQL.
Okay.
So real database programmers do this.
Okay.
And just like real HTML developers, great HTML. They don't read real
SQL.
So where was the SQL? There it is. Select ride.origin, ride.destination, ride.departure-date, person.name, from person as person one, inner join, so there are inner joins and outer joins, inner joins. So this is a fully specified person. Yep.
So would you tell us if you're looking at access and then if you have the thing that you were trying to do with
the
SQL, then you
should
do that.
Do that and send it to my email and say, run that.
Okay.
They'd have to add the tables. But there are SQL commands for loading the tables. Okay. You're going to get more of this than you really want tomorrow or next week. Because when you want to connect the web to the database,
yeah,
you can't do it visually right now. So you end up doing it through SQL. When you try to make a web page that connects to a database, that's right. So what you're going to do is you're going to actually write a PHP program that generates the SQL that pulls back what you want. So you're actually not even going to write the SQL directly. You're going to write a program that writes SQL. Which will make you really glad that you called last week's assignment. And there's only one saving grace. No homework. This is the last homework. Well, this is minor matter of a midterm. That's why. Okay. So, let me go back and tell you why none of this really actually works that way. There's an entire class that I teach with that. So what you're getting is you're getting the teaching style that says, here's idea one, here's what we know about it, here's idea two, here's what we know about it, here's idea three, here's what we know about it, right? So if you take the information retrieval class, it's here's everything we know about information retrieval. And if all that was wrong, here's actually how it really works. All that was wrong, here's actually how it really works. So it's the sort of progressively deeper version. So there is what I just told you actually isn't the whole story. And there's a deeper version. So here's a little peek of the deeper version. So what happens in real database applications like banking and airline reservations and stuff? Well, when the database screws up, you lose a lot of money. Right? So imagine a bank where What can you do in a bank? You can put money in, you can take money out, right? What if you're putting money in and take money out at the same time? Well then, if the money goes in before it comes out, it should let you do it. But if it comes out before it goes in, it shouldn't let you do it. And so the bank has to make sure that if it takes the money in and then the computer fails, when the computer comes back, it remembers it's got the money. Yeah? And that if you have transactions that have to execute in a certain order,
that order gets respected. The second one doesn't happen until after the first one is done.
Right.
So you have to get, you have to not just worry about one query. You have to worry over one insertion. You have to worry about how these things relate to each other when the entire world is transferring money around at the same time. Right? So you don't want to take money out of this account, ship it to somebody else, have them put it in their account, and have their computer break while it's on the way, and your computer breaks while it's on the way, and then the money is gone. Right? It's been erased from anyone's memory. Okay. So, just to see how this might be a little bit of a problem, imagine that you are working on your project report at the end of the semester, and you go typing stuff into your project report, and meanwhile your partner is typing in to a different section of the same report, and you're both logged into the same account, sharing the same disk, and one of you saves it first, and then the other one saves a version that doesn't have the changes from the first version. This sort of thing happens all the time, right? And you get screwed up by writing old file over the new file. Okay, so that's the sort of thing that we're trying to avoid. So this is the example I was talking about. It's got a balance of $500. You try to deposit a $50 check. Somebody tries to cash a $100 check at the same time. When you're done, you might have 500 plus 50 minus 100, or you might have gone from 500 down to 450 and then had the failure. And so you can get these things to occur in different orders and have failures at different times result in different states. So what you really want is you want to say, I got this set of transactions, and I don't care if you run them. What I care about is if you run half of them. If you don't run any of it, or if you run all of it, that's okay. But I want them to be run as a package. Right. So this is the idea of asymmetricity. I don't want the database ever to be in a state that doesn't reflect reality. But I want everybody's individual transactions to appear as if they were run without the other transactions going on at the same time. And I want a list for this. So they got this added. So the basic trick here is you keep a log. You write what it is you're planning to do to the log, and then you make the changes to the database. And then, if there's a problem in the middle, if the problem occurred while you're writing the log, you haven't changed anything in the database. If the problem occurred while you're changing the database, every time you change the database, you're reporting the log what you've done. You can always keep track of where you were in your plan. And then you can go back when you recover and reverse from where you were back to the start and start over again. So commercial databases, things like Oracle, have this in. The database that we created for the registrar earlier might have classes that have nobody in them. They might have students that have dropped out of the university, but they're still in some class. So when the student is removed from the university, they're taken out of the student table. But the primary key might be still sitting in some foreign key table in an enrollment database, right? So what you'd like to do is you'd like to say, these things are linked. Every time I remove one of these, I remove everything it's linked to. So you have to tell the system. We told the system where the primary keys are, but we never told it where the foreign keys were. So what we do here is we tell the system where the foreign keys are, which primary key it matches to. And then if you have a removal of an item by primary key, all the items for that foreign key get removed automatically. Right. In a clean up state. So that's that's referred to as referential integrity. And that ensures that at every time, if there's a foreign key value, it must exist in the table that it's corresponding to as the primary key. You can't enter it into the foreign key table unless it's in the primary key. Okay. And, if you would sacrifice another small portion of the tree, you can write down that SQL was the muddiest point. Or anything else you like. Thank you.